Hey everyone, this is Achyut Dabhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take a look at Mars's upcoming conjunction to Jupiter in the sign of Aries. And we've already taken this conjunction through the 12 signs and looked at your horoscopes. We did that yesterday. If you missed it, be sure to check it out. So today what we're going to do is start taking that astrological jewel that is the Jupiter-Mars combination in the sign of Aries and start turning it in order to gain insights, in order to reflect on the archetypal combination so that we can prepare to meet it, see it, learn from it in our lives. So on that note, I have three insights for the Jupiter-Mars conjunction that we're going to be looking at today. This is not the only thing we will say about this combination. We will also probably be doing a top 10 or something like that just to really fill it out and give a broader understanding. But today we're going to have some focused insights, sort of a deeper meditation. I'm bringing in the I Ching. We have three kind of key insights that I've used to summarize this upcoming conjunction that we'll look at. So before that, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments in the comment section. All of this helps the channel to grow. Really appreciate it when you guys do that. Don't forget, when you do subscribe, be sure to click the notification bell for updates when I go live. Transcripts of my daily talks can always be found on my website, nightlightastrology.com, where you can also learn more about my upcoming class, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, which starts on June 12th. You can learn more about it on my website. Click on the courses page, go to the first year program, scroll down to learn more about it. You can learn more about everything that the course includes. We also have now included a video on this page so that you can go back and visit that course Q&A that we did with alumni a few weeks ago. So if you want to see what some recent alumni have to say about their experience in the course, you can be sure to check that out. It's now there on the first year course page. The course is a deep dive into ancient Hellenistic astrology. It is ideal for people who are looking to deepen their study of astrology for the sake of personal growth and transformation. Astrology is a wonderful thing to, it's a bit like learning, like if you practice yoga, you want to be able to develop your own home practice. This is the perfect course for people who want to have enough knowledge of astrology that you can start to become a little bit more of your own reader, interpreter of the daily motions of the planets, applying them to your birth chart. As well as, you know, hopefully always having teachers in your lives. That's certainly the case for me. I have, you know, people that I look to, and then of course I'm able to read for myself as well. But it's good to have deeper knowledge of this subject if you are someone who loves astrology and feels like, you know, this is a topic you really love and you feel like you could go deeper with it. So a lot of people take the class for that reason. The other main reason that people take the course, in addition to personal and spiritual growth, is for the sake of perhaps developing a professional practice to use astrology to aid other people in the process of self-discovery in the work that is a lifetime. So check out the class. It includes 30 classes on the year that I teach on Sundays from noon to about 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. Those are all recorded and kept on a website. If you can't make the live webinars, you can always watch the replays. We have 12 guest teachers that come in outside of those 30 classes, and also about 8 breakout study sessions in between major units led by our tutoring staff. They are also available for you year round in our discussion forum, and I make myself available there as well. If you have any questions about the program, feel free to email us info@nightlightastrology.com. And you'll find the payment options at the bottom for signing up. The early bird payment is available until the week that class starts, which is coming up. So you've got another week and a half, 2 weeks or so to take advantage of that. There's a 12-month payment plan if you want to use it. Remember, the early bird payment is not available after the class starts. If you sign up late for any reason, you're going to be stuck with the normal tuition plan. We only make early bird available for people who sign up prior to the start of class and pay in full. That's how you save that and get that good deal. There is also need-based tuition. If your budget is such that you need a flexible price point, check out need-based tuition. We do still have some of those available. So if you, again, have any questions about need-based tuition, fill it out, and you know, email us with questions. Again, the email address is info@nightlightastrology.com. All right, well, all of that aside, let us now turn our attention to the real-time clock and brush up on this Mars into Aries dynamic, which is happening May 24th to July 5th. And in particular, we are today going to be looking at the fact that Mars will conjoin Jupiter in Aries on May 29th. And you're already going to be feeling the effects of that right now as of the 24th of May, when Jupiter enters Aries, which we talked about yesterday. But also all the way until June 3rd, Jupiter will not only conjoin with Mars will not only conjoin with Jupiter on May 29th, but then be separating, and hence you'll be feeling it all the way through about June 3rd. That's the 3-degree range of separation within which you typically will still be feeling the energy. All right, now let's look at the real-time clock and see what we can see. So the first thing to notice is the exact conjunction of Mars and Jupiter in Aries on May 29th. This is early morning Eastern time on May 29th. You could be feeling it more intensely on the 28th, the 29th, and the 30th in particular, probably the strongest days, but then separating until June 3rd and all the way up until May 29th, you'll be feeling the application as well. So that's sort of the overall range. You could say May 24th to June 3rd, broadly speaking. So this is what we're going to talk about today. This conjunction is one of the more dynamic conjunctions of the entire year. It certainly made my list of biggest, you know, I think you guys know if you watch my channel regularly that we talked quite a bit about Jupiter's conjunction with Neptune as one of the bigger transits of the year. That was a highlight in the month of April. The month of May, of course, has featured the ongoing effects of eclipse season, as well as Jupiter's entrance into Aries, and now Mars's entrance into Aries in conjunction with Jupiter, which is another one of the biggest, certainly one of the biggest conjunctions of the year, if not one of the biggest transits overall of 2022. Now, that does not mean that you will be feeling every single effect of this transit on the day of, or even within that range that I presented, which again, broadly speaking, is like the conjunctions May 29th separates until June 3rd. It's not like, well, everything will happen at that point. It's, remember, in a cardinal sign, when planets conjoin in a sign like Aries, it's a little bit like a new moon in the sense of a starting point. So a Mars-Jupiter conjunction is the seeding of something that will become more pronounced and whose effects will ripple outward from the space of the conjunction into the rest of the year. Remember, Jupiter in Aries will eventually retrograde and come back over the same conjunction degree prior to the end of October. I think it's probably early October that it does so. And so you're going to see this a kind of a reprise of similar themes. So you could even say, broadly speaking, that this Jupiter-Mars energy coming together right now will have a ripple effect that lasts pretty much through the end of October. Then again, in December, Jupiter comes back and we'll go back over that conjunction mark once more. Because conjunction marks are a bit like a new moon, I feel like, you know, the bigger, slower, more dynamic conjunctions, when a planet comes back over that same degree a few times through backward and forward motion, through its retrograde and so forth, you usually feel it. So when we look back later in the year, when we talk again in December about Jupiter ingressing back into the sign of Aries, it will be in many ways continuing the work that starts here in May as Jupiter enters Aries and makes its first big splash in the new sign. Maybe no bigger moment in the entire transit of Jupiter through Aries. There's a few, but I would say one of the biggest is this conjunction with Mars. So the things that are happening right now and in, say, the next week ahead, they're going to be, this is part of a story that we're going to be talking about for a good amount of the rest of this year. So with that in mind, I have three kind of insights, lessons, takeaways that I think are appropriate for this transit and that I've been reflecting on lately in my sort of daily meditations and prayer time, which I hope you'll find useful. We're going to start with, and I have also incorporated into today's reading the I Ching. So let's talk about the first concept. It's the idea that any kind of meaningful leadership, and by leadership, let's not make it too, extravagant and egotistical. We're not talking about, you know, your or my greatness, you know, but sometimes you say leadership and you're like, yes, I'm a leader. You know, I lead people because I'm great. You know what I mean? We're not talking about that kind of leadership. Let's define leadership very basically. I make a choice, and in doing so, I stand apart. I stand apart from others at work. I might stand apart a little bit from my spouse or someone I care about, or my kids or my family. I might stand out among my friends. I might stand out societally. Something I do, I step apart from the group or the collective or the pack. I step apart. Now, why I step apart? There's a million different reasons. Some of them probably really positive, some of them very negative. I can say that at times in my life, I have stepped apart and had people follow me or my example in ways that I wish they wouldn't have, in ways that I wished I wouldn't have stood apart and done something, that other people followed that probably was regrettable. I've followed people in my life at times where I wish I wouldn't have, because they stood out or stood apart or chose something and I chose to follow, and it probably wasn't the best. There's many instances in which the opposite has been true, and I've done or said something standing apart, and maybe others have followed me, and I've thought, wow, that was pretty special. That was good. Made an impact. Did something that helped someone. There have been many leaders that I've had in my life in many different walks of life who have, in their choice to stand apart somehow, have taught me something. They've led in even just giving me an example to live by or something like that. So we all know what this is like. We follow people because of how they define themselves, how they stand out somehow as an example or a choice they're making or a value they're asserting or a risk they're taking or something like that. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good. But all leadership begins with the capacity to follow, or it entails following. They're like a dyad archetypally. So to lead and to follow, they go hand in hand. When I think deeply about Jupiter and Mars in Aries, I think very much about the choice to stand apart and the choice of who or what to follow. Let me give you a breakdown of why. Jupiter, broadly speaking, represents things like teachers, gurus, systems of philosophy, knowledge or wisdom, teachings and teachers, gurus and sages, doctrines and dogmas. It represents anything that gives us a coherent sense of moral direction or purpose. Jupiter could be a university degree track that you follow with certain curriculum you have to take in order to get your major. Jupiter could be the rules or teachings of a spiritual or religious tradition. Whatever the case might be, Jupiter is in some ways going to embody a cohesive set of teachings or rules or skills or ideas or something like that that offer coherence and that usually give us a sense of authority or purpose or power or pride or something like that. Mars, on the other hand, is about action. Mars is about will, and Mars has a lot to do with risk-taking as well as asserting ourselves. Mars is associated with the action of cutting. And so when you think about what it means to individuate, from the time that you're born and the umbilical cord is cut, there is the idea of to individuate, to find ourselves, to be ourselves, there is a sense in which we need to learn how to, in a hopefully a healthy, vital way, stand apart from others. So this is Mars, in a sense, psychologically. You could associate Mars with war and conflict and, you know, strife and hostility and weapons and, you know, warfare and things like that. Also assertiveness, and also the need to stand apart, to, almost like, to cut ourselves out of some fabric of which we are a part, religiously, morally, socially, whatever, and to pull ourselves out of some shared context so that we stand alone or apart. Now, there are ways of standing alone or apart that are compulsive, that are sort of pathological, you know, and there are those that are like healthy and probably very healthy. And, you know, I can't be the one who, there's no way that I could possibly define, you know, what that is. It's a path of discernment, is it not, for all of us that we have to walk every day and figure out, how do I stand alone or apart? How do I separate, cut myself away from certain things in order to stand alone or stand in something that makes me. So this is very Mars in Aries. Now, when you put that individualizing quality of Mars in Aries into this conjunction, this alchemical union with Jupiter in Aries, we have questions about what do I believe and how do I assert what I believe in contrast to what others believe? Or what is the path or the teacher or the calling or the set of instructions or the degree or the education or the religious or spiritual affiliation or the group that I belong to? And how do I align my individuality with the appropriate system or rules or thoughts or philosophy or like what's the paradigm or something like that? And how do I set myself apart from one? There have been moments in every great religious tradition where there are schisms, very Mars-Jupiter-like thing. A schism might be something like, historically, say, like the Protestant Reformation, where the need to break off and for a section, a subsection of the Christian fold to sort of break off and assert a new way of doing the religious life, the path. So Mars, Jupiter, you know, whether it's an opposition, a square, conjunction, tends to bring up the tension between belonging to something and standing apart from something, moral, religious, spiritual, academic, etc., all Jupiter things. Okay, so now this is not, remember, we're just covering this archetypal combination from a particular angle today. This is not all there is to it, right? We could talk about Jupiter, Mars, for example, in relation to competitive sports or the entrepreneurial and endeavors of someone starting a business or something like that. So there's lots of other angles. Today we're going to focus on this idea of the individual standing with or apart from something represented by Jupiter. A teacher, a set of teachings, doctrines, dogmas, etc. Okay, so let's, on that note, get kind of given that archetypal combination, there is something about Mars and Jupiter that brings up that dyad of leading and following. So the first thing that comes to my mind right now is that if you are faced with a choice, and the choice is about, you know, taking a stand for something that you believe, something that you want to stand with, or something that you want to stand apart from, something that you want to join, or something that you want to quit, something that you feel aligned with, or something that you feel the need to separate or dissociate yourself from, all potential combinations of Mars, Jupiter, probably joining with or separating from something Jupiterian. It could be an institution or a group or a set of colleagues or friends who have like-minded goals or a kind of a cultural niche or probably something religious, spiritual, philosophical as well. But you might be right now feeling like, do I stand with something or do I stand apart from something? And the feeling that something is, you're reaching like an alchemical boiling point of deciding, am I going to align myself with something or separate myself from something? I think the key to being very discerning with this moment and this potential combination that Mars-Jupiter presents, I think it comes down to understanding that in order to stand apart and make a choice to define ourselves with or against something, we have to be very aware of who or what might follow us, who or what we may influence, in other words, and how. Not that we can predict the future perfectly, but we have to be aware of the fact that a choice to set ourselves apart will have social ramifications, even those that we can't see. Some of them are so deeply mysterious, but the way we choose to define ourselves and individualize to align with or apart from something will necessarily influence and affect other people around us. We can't be 100% responsible for everyone. I'm not saying we should take on some kind of savior complex, but it is very important to understand that a choice to stand alone or apart from something or to align with something has social effect around us. It's never happening in a vacuum. Mars, Jupiter can get lost in the delusion that this is about me and my choice and my right and my alignment and my purpose and my will and my sovereignty and what is me and what isn't me and so forth. I think it really helps, you know, either in how we make a choice or the actual choice we make, to consider, how will this affect others around me? Because when I stand apart, it's never in a vacuum. There is a social ripple effect that it has. And even just trying to be conscious of that with care in the heart can shift how we make a choice that we have to make. Maybe it doesn't change the choice that we make, but it changes how we make it. It helps us to make it in a gentler, kinder, more constructive way, less severe, less harsh or critical or something like that. On the other hand, sometimes being bold and courageous and strong, it's very possible that this will also help other people to, you know, make similar decisions and judgments in their life. And while we are not necessarily, you know, responsible for other people and what they choose or do, we also, sometimes it may be the case that, like, look, standing up for something, or taking a stand, or, you know, strongly aligning with something or separating from something, is not something I can run from or hide or do quietly. I need to make it clear or plain, or I need to speak up, or I need to say something, or make it clear and apparent what I'm doing, because there's a larger social ripple effect, and it's important to be honest and frank and direct about what I'm doing. What, you know, see what I mean? So the first realization that I've been thinking a lot about, though, is that whenever you have to make a choice for or against, to join with or to part ways with or something like that, what am I aligned with and what am I not aligned with? If you sit down and think of the ecosystem that you're living in and making that choice within and just become conscious of it, then we're taking the full scope of the archetype into consideration, because separating and joining, leading and following, these things go hand in hand. Oftentimes, the strongest choices that we have to make about where to align ourselves or where to separate from also stem from how capable we are of following inner guidance. And that is point number two. How can we make a strong choice to individualize, to say, this is my cause, this is my purpose, these are my people, these are my beliefs, this is my practice, this is what I align with or not, or this is what I can't do? How could we possibly do that? Not only do we need to be aware of the ecology, the social relational world that we live in when making such a choice, our individuality only means as much as we are able to recognize the dignity and existence of all of those that we're connected to on some level. How could we make that choice if we also don't know how to follow? If we don't know how to follow guidance and direction from within, if we don't know how to listen to that still quiet voice of truth that tells us, you know, this is where you align, this is where you don't align. I think sometimes we try to solve problems by making choices rather than making choices because we have sat with a problem and listened. There's a big difference. We know there's a problem, so we try to make a choice to solve it. But the choice has been concocted up here, rooted in a very impulsive and impatient understanding of the nature of the problem, or, you know, the decision. So following also begins with listening, with creating space for a decision or a choice or to align or to separate. We have to give space for that decision, for that consideration. We have to give silence and allow for silence and time to work in mysterious, beautiful, subtle ways. The divine lives and moves in the spaces that we listen, that we create. If we create space, if we listen, and if we allow silence and time to flow around a big choice, align with or separate from, then that often gives us the indication about what to do. There is so much more, it is a much higher likelihood that if by having to make a strong choice that we have a positive impact on those around us, that we set a good example. If anyone is meant to follow, that they will, and in a good way, or that we just set an example of how to say no to something. But if we're to have a positive impact on the world around us, then it is going to be because we make whatever choice we do from that space of having listened, created space, created quiet, really attended to the choice and the matter at hand, and then followed the natural guidance that springs up from within us. Because the truth is that people follow leaders who have followed inner direction, right? But if we're going to have any kind of positive social impact, create social change, Mars, Jupiter can be such an advocate, can be such a follow me, this is what I'm doing, and see my example, and, you know, something like that. I'm going to go this way, you know, I'm walking down the trail that away, and then, oh, okay, let's go, let's follow, you know. But how much easier is it to follow someone when you feel that the choice that they've made has been made from a space of careful listening, space, silence, attending to that inner voice? It's because you can tell that someone has followed and listened and done that, that they become worthy of following in return. So it's amazing how closely standing apart and taking a stand and being a leader in even the smallest ways, it doesn't have to be a big aggrandizing thing here. It's just in whatever choices you have to make it's a strong choice. It's a bold choice. It's a proclamation of sorts. In your relative world, it's a step apart somehow, perhaps. If you're aware of the world around you, the social ramifications, if you've given time for space, silence, listening, you've attended to things, then people will follow if they're meant to, because they will see that you have followed something in the way that you're standing apart. That is a very deep Mars, Jupiter, and Aries kind of teaching. And finally, three, the collective and the individual are always moving toward and apart from one another, like two waves that are like lungs that are like breathing in and out. There's always a space in our life that we need to protect our individuality and the ways in which we are utterly, totally unique and can never be satisfied by any kind of collective participation. It's not my sports team. It's not my religious community. It's not the school I practice in astrologically, or the work that I do, or even, you know, my social media friends, or like whatever. There's a way in which we have to protect our independence and our utter unique individuality at all costs. And it's like there are going to be wave movements at times in your life that amplify the need to stand apart and to individuate and to protect who you are as a person by saying no to the pressure to identify with a cause or a group or a righteous mission or a doctrine or a dogma or a career or a label or whatever. And you're just going to feel this aversion to any kind of collective defining. And that's good. It's healthy. Mars, Jupiter could amplify that right now. Especially, I want to cut ties with some Jupiterian thing or presence that it's not helping me. It could be a very natural part of this. But it's also important to remember, we don't exist in a vacuum. We're social beings, and there is a deeply collective, communal, social aspect of who we are that we can't escape. You know, the planets don't stand alone. You can't understand Mars without understanding Venus. You can't understand Jupiter without Mercury. Can't understand the moon and sun without Saturn. These are all the planetary contrarieties, right? So we are participatory, relational beings living in a relational cosmos, a well-ordered collection of living beings, strung together by intimate, mysterious laws of karma. And grace is flowing through everything, helping us learn and grow. And it's phenomenal, but it is social by nature. You can't escape some social dimension of your existence, some way in which you need to also define yourself in relation to traditions, cultures, interests, communities, likes and dislikes in the, you know, in the thumbs up and thumbs down section of the world. You have to be able to say, this is where I belong. These are people I relate to. And if that gets neglected because of the strong, fortified sense of individuality, then we become sick. In the same way that if you get lost in groupthink, you lose your sense of utter uniqueness. But the two are always moving in and out of one another. And I wonder if right now there isn't some kind of wave pattern that's peaking and asking us, how are you different? How do you stand apart? And also, where do you belong? I feel like it can be a deeply existential moment. And even if we aren't clear about where we stand, who are our people, so to speak, or what are my beliefs, what is the paradigm I'm operating with for now, how am I different, how am I apart, we may not be clear on those things right now. But the way I'm seeing this is that Mars Jupiter is like a seeding moment. It has the feeling of seeding a deeper intention to get clear about it. And so I that's what I'm really watching for in myself. I'm seeing it in the lives of a lot of my clients as I look and read for people with Jupiter coming through the conjunction with Mars coming through the conjunction with Jupiter right now. It's interesting that I Ching has a famous hexagram number 23 that I got when I was asking about this transit in my prep time today. I Ching hexagram number 23 is sometimes called splitting apart. And it basically shows all yin lines with one yang line at the top, which is essentially like showing something solid being, you know, slowly eroded from the base up. Almost like, something that's being eaten up by termites or something, or a structure that's about to fall apart. To me, the interesting piece about this hexagram, splitting apart, is that it carries the tension of something potentially eroding and having to split apart. Mars, Jupiter in Aries, a seeding moment that could be defined by saying, this is a time where I split off. I think this transit probably leans a little bit more in the direction of splitting off in the name of individuality or further individualizing, because I think Aries and Mars in general are a little bit more like that. Mars is strong in its own dignity right now. So could this be a moment of splitting apart, a schism, a breaking open of a moment where there is some need for for example, I could see this being a moment where there is religious division, like a institution that breaks into two different sects. Whatever the case might be, I could see that hexagram number 23 splitting apart. Could this be that moment, that defining moment where we have to break away to start our own business after belonging to a firm or a company, to, you know, leave a religious organization after, you know, we've belonged to it for a long time in order to have a different kind of experience or join a different group or something? Could there be something like that? I think that's one possibility. But what's interesting is that the fifth line is also changing. The fifth line reads this: a shoal of fishes, favor comes through the court ladies, everything acts to further. So I want to read you the little commentary here. In immediate proximity to the strong, light-giving principle at the top, that would be the yang line that's at the top of this hexagram compared to the yin line that's in the fifth place right below it. The nature of the dark force, now that's not evil, that would be just yin, the dark force undergoes a change. It no longer opposes the strong principle by means of intrigue, but submits to its guidance. Indeed, as the head of the other weak lines, it leads all to her husband and thus gains his favor. Now, this is like ancient sort of, traditional, you know, sort of Confucian, ancient Chinese culture. So I'll try to translate that in a second. But inasmuch as the lower element thus voluntarily places itself under the higher, it attains happiness and the higher also receives its due. Therefore, all goes well. So you can almost imagine in this hexagram, let me just see if I can actually draw it out. I'm going to put up the real-time clock again and just sort of draw this for you so you can see it, because it's pretty cool. All right, so imagine now this is kind of what the hexagram looks like, and I'm just going to do like a really loose drawing of it. These are yin broken lines. I'm sorry, it looks really bad. So the double lines leading up to the top, these are all yin lines, broken lines. So they, and then there's one yang line at the top. Okay, so this suggests that the yin is eroding the yang, right? So the yang, let's say the yang is your religious belief. This would suggest that that religious belief is splitting apart. Or let's say it's a political belief or a group affiliation or a company that you belong to. The strong yang line at the top would be like the thing, the ideal that you serve, or the boss that you serve, or the doctrine that you follow, or whatever. It's something probably in this case sort of Jupiterian. Then you have all of these yin lines rising up and essentially eroding that thing. So that's the splitting apart idea. But what's so interesting is that the fifth changing line here talks about this line, which all of the other yin lines below it follow. So all of the rest of these lines are essentially following that fifth line, and that this fifth line aligns itself with the sixth line that is appropriate to it. So in that sense, it then leads all of the other yin lines to follow the appropriate guidance or principle at the top. So this is a really nuanced teaching, and I am not by any means like a super I Ching expert, right? But let me just give you a feel for what this is like. Let's say that in a traditional, you know, sort of a traditional household in the ancient world, it's kind of patriarchal in nature, okay? So just, I hate all this too, but like it's, just kind of think about it from this old Confucian standpoint. Let's say that, you know, the dad kind of sets the rules for the house. He's sort of the lawgiver in the house. And, you know, not everybody in the house is really happy. In fact, the kids, the wife, you know, they're all rising up, and in a sense, they're about to topple a tyrannical father. But the wife, who's at the very top, closest to the husband, by relating closely to that line, has the power to interact with it in a way that it becomes worthy of following again, or that the principle of that top line changes somehow, such that rather than all of those lines coming up to topple it, there's a reform that's made. So just like the Protestant Reformation, rather than discarding Christianity, it's as if the yin comes in, and rather than saying, let's topple it and throw it all out, it says, by my influence, by my persuasion, I am going to transform it so that it is more hospitable. And then everything else, rather than becoming an eroding influence, once again, falls into right relationship with it. It's a bit like if a pastor were to get into some kind of moral trouble and have to go through, you know, rehab. If like, let's say a pastor fell into a time of having problems with like drugs or something, and went to rehab to, you know, recover from a problem with alcohol, that the influence, the reforming influence, could be one that creates something positive that then restores some kind of balance and flow in the group. But it's a reforming element that comes in and says, you better change, otherwise all of this energy is coming up to take you out. Okay, so Mars, Jupiter, again, could this be a moment that, you know, where that thing of like splitting off is happening, or the pressure is there to reform or revise something so that it's more hospitable, so you can be more aligned with the value? That's to me, that is one of the elements of this fifth line that, you know, speaks really loudly. I think that you look right now at this question again through, as I'm like speaking all of this, I'm thinking again of the question of leadership versus following. Those who lead have to be aware of those who follow. If you're not aware of how those are who are following are receiving you or receiving the broader teachings, and there's any way in which, you know, you're not listening, eventually that means you're not really serving. It means you're not aware of who you ought to be serving. And eventually the group will topple the leader, or the principle, or the thing that holds everything together will be overthrown. Or in the best sense, if there starts to be a symbiotic understanding of what needs to change at the crucial time when things really do need to change, then reform is possible. So I also see this as a moment of like having to make hard choices about whether to stick with something or quit something, if something is capable of being reformed or if it's not capable of being reformed, which a lot of which boils down to whether someone or something is receptive to change or not. And this could be us, it could be something around us. We could be asking how much of an influence or impact can I have on someone or something to create change versus how intractable is someone or something, or how intractable is something within myself. So I want to close by reading you guys something. And to me, the only way that I know how to deal with such energies is to turn to my spiritual practice. There's a book I've been reading about Quakerism, because I've been going to some Quaker worship services lately, and it's been a great complement to my practice of bhakti yoga. I'm really deeply enjoying the Quaker silent practice of silence. So they meet together. It's like a universalist Christian group that meets together and often practices, you know, it's a prayerful silence for basically an hour. And I'm really loving it. Anyway, I'm reading this book about Quakerism written by a guy named J. Brent Bill. And the book is called Holy Silence. And he says this: when we really want to hear and be heard by someone we love, we don't go rushing into noisy crowds. We look for someplace quiet, a setting apart from all noise and distraction. Silence is, after all, a form of intimacy. That's how we experience it with our friends and lovers. As relationships grow deeper and more intimate, we spend more and more quiet time alone with our lover. We talk in low tones about things that matter. We do not shout them to each other. We may shout about them to others, but quietness is the hallmark of love. I know that whenever I'm feeling most intensely that someone or something needs to be adjusted, reformed, modified, or I'm going to quit, or, you know, whatever, like, and it is, or, you know, something needs to change in me, or I'm going to quit, or I'm going to do something, you know, that drastic sense of needing to act from a place of conviction, you know, like when that comes up, however that comes up, the best ally that I have is creating time, space, quiet, and silence. Deliberate periods, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour here or there, to literally just sit and let the question be addressed by time, space, and quiet. Or I will call up one of my dear friends and do exactly what this book is talking about, which is to share my heart in the quiet, small, intimate conversation with someone very dear to me. Maybe that's a therapist, maybe it's a friend. But I know that when there are big decisions to be made, when reform is needed, when I need to align myself with something or step apart from something, and it feels like, you know, the boiling point is being reached here with Mars Jupiter, I know that it is silence and quiet, a prayerful attending to what's in front of me that is going to help me out the most. So I wanted to share these thoughts today. They're kind of rambling a little bit all over the place. I hope that they are useful to you. If you have stories to share about Jupiter Mars along these lines, or any other lines that, you know, you want to share, please use the hashtag grabbed in the comments section, or email us grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. I would love to hear about this transit and how you are perceiving it, how any of these lessons or key insights I've shared today are applicable to you, or if you have anything to add to them. I always love hearing from people. Don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments, and click the notification bell for updates. You can find a transcript of this talk on the website, nightlightastrology.com. And don't forget, while you're there, to check out my new course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, which starts on June 12th. That's what I've got for today. And on that note, I have planned time for quiet and silence this afternoon for myself. So I'm going to go do that, and I hope you'll check into that silence if you need to as well. All right, take it easy. Bye.